Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, in the first half, we have Jeff Cesario and much, much more. First, I'll tell you about Simply Safe. You got 30 minutes? Good. Not going to have to worry about break-ins ever again with Simply Safe. It is that fast. 30 minutes. Set up. Soup to nuts. Simply Safe. Two eyes in there. Go to simplysafe.com/Adam. Get all the sensors you need. Get your custom system. Get it up and running. And get your free security camera at simplysafe.com/Adam.
80% of Americans found something they can all agree on. America is falling apart. How did we get here and how do we get out of it? Newsflash, media plays a central role in both. Check out our new podcast, Media Roundtable. We'll talk to media moguls, top hosts on both sides of the aisle, and the people who pay for it all, the sponsors. Media Roundtable is not just a podcast. It's a movement to restore trust and civility to the national conversation, and we need you to be a part of it. Look for Media Roundtable wherever you get your shows and subscribe now.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, retired four-star U.S. Navy Admiral James Stavridis and former Special Ops Officer Elliot Ackerman. With Gina Grad on news, Bolt Bryan on sound effects, and Jeff Cesario brings us the sports with Chet Waterhouse. And now, reminding you, the best way to spend your stimulus check is to order several copies of I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Man, did you get it on now? Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Hello, bud pie.
Bud pie. Mon petit jeu.
Yeah, Drew's got some chops when you push him. You know, you gotta push
and
him.
Because he is an opera singer, he must speak some Italian as well.
Well, that's probably true. Mm. Yeah, he'll play it a little close to the vest sometimes, and then he'll bust out and sing the national anthem at the Kings
right.
game.
Right.
But let's not forget, Drew, big musical theater guy all the way through high school, and then I guess into college as well, because they had a big Hair, was it Hair or Godspell? I can't remember. They're the same, feel like the same thing to me, but he had a big reunion at his college the other day. All right. Well, I've got some answers to a few questions. One is I went out last night to do comedy. I saw Jim Jeffries there. I saw Adam
Fresh
Ray
off the
there. Fresh
That's
off
right.
the links. And I walked up to him, and the first thing he said is, Brad Williams drives the golf ball 235 yards consistently.
He drives right? the golf ball, but not the golf cart.
That's yeah. right. That's
Very
right.
Upsetting.
And he said he outdrove him all day.
Wow.
Maybe it's me. Maybe it's Maybelline. I don't know. Yeah. But when, and maybe it's just the guys I hang out with, but when Brad was saying he was going off to play some golf with Jim Jeffries, I was thinking pitch and putt. Not putt-putt, just a par 3, 110 yeah. yard, sure. you know. Don't bother bringing the drivers or the fairway woods. You know, you just bring your 9-iron and your sand wedge and your putter, and you kind of go at it swinger style, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Perfect.
Right. No, they were playing a full course.
Yeah.
And
Brad's the real deal. He's posted many videos from the golf course.
Well, and did you see his outfit? I mean, he had the hat, he had the shirt. He was ready to play.
Yeah, and he went out there with this. It's funny, Jim's like, well, you know he's got custom clubs. And it's like, well, of course he has custom clubs. He'd have to go to fucking Toys R Us and play with plastic clubs if he didn't get custom clubs made. But Jim, who's, you know, a stout 210-pound dude, well-built, was outdriven consistently yeah. by Brad Williams, which nice. Jim pointed out to me on several occasions. Yes.
Or impressive with the custom clubs, because I assume you have to assume they're shorter than the average club, and you got the more torque and more, you know, length with that longer club. You got the compact swing. You're getting 230 out of that one. That's impressive.
Well, that's what I was thinking, but I don't have a mind for this at all, but I was wondering if a lower center of gravity is more helpful in a case like this.
I think there are...
Or is he just allowed to be a good golfer?
No. I'm saying it's more impressive, all things considered.
Yeah. Yeah, I think different sports have different advantages, different positions. You know, if you're going to play forward in the NBA, you want to be tall. Maybe if you're going to catch in MLB, you want to be a little shorter and a little stouter. You know, there's kind of different positions and different sizes. But I do not think that once you get under 5 foot, it's any kind of help at all in golf. He's just very skilled at what he does. So, very good golfer. And that was backed up later on by Adam Ray, who said very good golfer as well. So, evidently, I'm the last guy to the Brad Williams golf party.
Have you ever golfed like they golf?
Yeah.
Andy, my fiance, is like a pro golfer that comes from a family of all like golfers, and I have no interest and I don't know how to do it.
Jimmy and I used to go out and golf when we had some time to go out and golf. We went to Maui once a million years ago, and we brought our golf clubs. We went there as like a couples thing, and meaning Jimmy and I were the couple.
Yeah, of course. And we understood.
We brought our golf clubs. And all I remember is Jimmy said to the person who was, you know, giving us the Bud Lights on the 18th green or the hole or whatever it is. I remember two things. I think Jimmy had done a commercial for like Miller Lite or something. And if you want to know how I'm wired and how Jimmy's wired, he had in his contract that he couldn't drink Bud Light. One or the other. I can't remember. Amstel Light for a year or whatever. We're in the middle of this deserted golf course in Maui, and the person just had like Miller Light, and Jimmy was like, "Nah, I can't do that." And I'm like, "Just put your fucking hand on the label. Let's do this." You know, and he's like, "Nah, I got a contract. Like, I don't want to get into trouble."
Wow.
Yeah. Turns out it served him well.
It's a company man.
I know.
Well, we know how. Remember when that happened with Britney Spears? It must have been a slow news week, because it was, she's pictured walking on the beach with a Coke and she has a Pepsi contract, and it made news.
Yeah, there was.
Yeah.
I think there was also famous Tom Brady story where he was driving an Aston Martin and he had a deal with Cadillac or something like that. There was some Aston Martin, Tom Brady, whatever. We should all hope our kids get into this kind of trouble one day.
Oh, my God.
The people at Bentley are outraged. Yeah. Outraged.
Some trouble at work.
Yeah.
Adam. So if you need help with golfing, too, there's a guy named Martin Trainer. He's a pro golfer, PGA. And
his last name is Trainer?
His name is Trainer. But he was on TV, and this picture came up. And if you look at the bottom of his biography, it's Dream Foursome.
Adam Carolla, Warren Buffett, and Nate Silver of the NBA?
No, Nate Silver, Adam 538.
Silver. Oh, Adam Silver. Wait, where's Nate Silver from?
Is that 538, Nate Silver?
538.
I might be the 538 guy or the American statistician.
Statistician.
Yeah. Oh,
Nate
really?
Silver, yeah, started 538. It's a site. I'm almost positive. Must have gotten the name wrong.
Yeah, no, you're right. Special correspondent for ABC News and 538. Editor-in-chief.
Yeah, he started a site making analytical predictions of elections and the Oscar and the Oscars and shit.
So he obviously just wants to make sure he's better than everyone he's golfing with.
Well,
you got Adam, Warren Buffett, and Nate Silver.
It will be done.
Nate Silver would be a great guest.
I was famously thrown off a driving range for hooking too many balls into the tennis court, actually over the top of the net. Shanking them into the tennis court or hooking them into the tennis court. So the guy came out, said, I've hit a bunch of balls into the tennis courts. We're getting complaints. If you do it again, you got to leave. Wow. And then he stood there and watched me tee up a ball and hook it right into the tennis court. Not that I was trying to do it. Maybe the club was a little, maybe the face was a little open.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And there it went, and he didn't even say you have to leave now. I just dropped my head, picked up my bucket, and I started to walk off the driving range. So,
you know, You know what else is really fun, though? I've gotten to do both of them, is the one in Vegas. You know, it's like three tiers. Mm-hmm. And you go up there and you drive the ball as far as you can. It has a little microchip in it. And that's kind of fun to see how far it goes. And also, Andy's sister in Minnesota runs one of those golf simulator places. So mm-hmm. you're
like getting it indoor, like indoor party street. Place.
Yeah, they're fun. Yeah. That's more my speed.
The simulator should keep going. Like, once you're done hitting the balls, then there's a simulated wife going, "You're drunk. What are you doing?" And he's going, "Get off my back, woman." And she's like, "Yep. You spend all your day whacking a bucket of balls. You got kids you're ignoring. And then you get into a big simulated fight. And then you stay.
Simulated motels.
The kids are like, "Dad, you missed my soccer game again."
Right. Yeah, the simulation should just keep going.
You're right.
No reason to stop it at the driving range. So that was one thing we got to. The other thing, the answer to the question, I've always told you guys about that famous Daytona. You can find a picture, Maxipata Cobra, and the Shelby car that he wanted to give away. And then he ended up selling it to a guy who ran one of those big slot car tracks back when they used to have those big slot car tracks out there. And then Phil Spector bought it for like $10,000. And then Phil Spector drove it around the streets of L.A. for a number of months. And he got too many tickets and it was too loud and too hot. And Phil's nuts. So he took like house paint, had a guy write all the records the car broke on the side of it with like house paint. And then he gave it to his bodyguard, and then his bodyguard gave it to his daughter. And then you fast forward to the 90s, and the car sitting in some broken down storage thing. The daughter worked at Sears full time. Think about a throwback.
Like retail?
Job. At the Sears warehouse, I think, or something.
Oh, wow.
So she was a complete and utter pedestrian. And there it sat, and many people, including Carroll Shelby himself, went over to her home, and she wouldn't open the screen door and told shoot everyone away. And at some point, this guy named Dr. Simeon, Fred Simeon, from the Simeon Collection in Philadelphia, got a little envoy together, came up with a price that she probably couldn't say no to, and then
she could quit Sears.
Sent her over, and then she got the money, quit Sears, and then set herself on fire.
Oh, right.
That was that story. But I happen to know that car's it's $30 million. and or maybe more, but at least $30 million. But I never knew what he paid for it. Guys played close to the vest, but we had him on as a guest on CarCast. It'll be this Saturday, Friday or Saturday?
Friday.
I should figure that out. And I asked him what he paid for this car in 2001. People knew this car was worth something in 2001. It was not, you know, wasn't one of these things where it's the back of the, you know, Auto Trader for $89. But he paid about kind of what I thought, which is in 2001, he paid $3.5 million for it.
A steal.
It's a lot of money for a car that somebody bought for $1,000 or and someone was given. I mean, bodyguard was given the car, but
worth 10 times the
now
amount.
$30 million. Not too shabby, less or 20 years later. So I got that price figured out. We got, I think our own, Gavin Newsom gave a news conference gave a little state of the state. He did it. I didn't know this, but Gary brought it up. He did it from Dodger Stadium. And the reason he did it from Dodger Stadium is because the capacity of Dodger Stadium is equal to the amount of Californians killed by COVID, which, I don't know that anyone would do the math on that. I don't know what the significance really is.
Pointlessly and, symbolic.
Right.
Well, also, if you're trying to get people back, you know, reintegrate them back into life and get to Dodger Stadium and, you know, get business going again, do you want to remind people that that's why you're there?
that's
how many people have died?
No.
Reopening the state.
But yeah. I'm not so sure that he wants to get people back or reintegrated into life. But, you know, now I was telling you guys, and we'd always talked about Subaru commercials and the cars are made with love and everything's good vibes. That is now spilled over into all of politics at this point. And I've never heard more talk about being sympathetic and empathetic and reaching out and pride and dignity. And it's such a weird thing because it's all nuts and bolts. Like there's teachers and unions and taxes and gas prices and infrastructure, like opening business. Let's stick with the nuts and the bolts. But here's Gavin. He gets out of the gate talking about staying the course, which I thought is a very interesting approach to one of the worst run states in the union. Like, we're staying the course. Okay, my kids are now at 1 year of being in their bedroom and not going to school, but we're going to stay the course. All right, let's just play it. 2 minutes.
Look, the state of our state, it remains determined. I remain determined. And I just want you to know, we're not going to change course just because of a few naysayers and doomsayers.
Hold on.
So the California critics out there.
Why not alter the course just a little bit, you fuckwad? Yeah. You're doing a horrible job running the state, and that's why you're being recalled. But we're going to stay the... What does staying the course even really mean? Should we go back and close down outdoor dining? Should we never let indoor dining reopen? Should the gyms still be closed? Should the schools still be closed? What do you mean we're going to stay the course?
It's a sad trend in politics, and probably for a long time. Never admit you're wrong. Never admit defeat. Never admit it was a mistake. And Gavin's just playing the playbook.
Staying the course. All right, sorry.
Wait, I'm sorry. I got to ask real quick. Do you think his underlying, you know, read between the lines, is he's talking about stay the course, don't recall me?
Probably.
Those are the doomsayers and naysayers.
I would say, Gina, that's a good call. All right, sorry. Go ahead, Dawson.
And doomsayers. So to the California critics out there who are promoting partisan political power grabs with outdated prejudices and rejecting everything that makes California truly great, we say this. We will not be distracted from getting shots in arms and our economy booming again. This is a fight for California's future. You know, since this pandemic started, uncertainty, well, it's been probably the only thing that we can be certain of. But now we're providing a little bit more certainty, certainty that we're safely vaccinating Californians as quickly as possible, certainty that we're safely reopening our economy, and certainty that we're safely getting our kids back into the classroom, all of which adds up to a much brighter future for our state. Because California, we're not going to come crawling back. We will roar back. You know, when this pandemic ends, and it will end soon, we're not going to go back to normal. Because I think we all agree, normal was never good enough. You know, normal accepts inequity. That's why Latinos are dying from COVID at a higher rate than any other racial or ethnic group. And while essential workers' wages aren't enough for them to afford the essentials, and why mothers have been leaving the workforce in staggering numbers. Look, our eyes are wide open to what's wrong. And so our journey back must also be a path to close those inequities. There is no economic recovery, no economic recovery without economic justice. With more compassion, more empathy, more connection, we can write the next chapter in California's story.
Connection, empathy, compassion. What the fuck is he talking about? They never really explain what that means. Look, everyone has a certain amount of sympathy, empathy, and compassion for homeless people. But what the fuck do you want us to do? Adopt a bum? Yeah. They're fucking, they're sleeping on the street, their own fucking filth. What do you want us to do? Right. Yes, I feel compassion for guys sleeping on the sidewalk. Now what? You got to enact something. You got to do something. And I will tell you that the compassion and the empathy, it's what caused the fucking homeless problem. Sorry, you got to lead. There must be rules. There's laws. You have to enforce those laws. The first day, the first guy takes a tent, pops it under the freeway overpass of the Ventura Freeway on Laurel Canyon and tries to bivouac on the sidewalk. You have to fucking scoop him up and something needs to be done. If you show him compassion and empathy and just sort of look the other way, then another tent pops up the following day, and so on and so forth. And now, I was in Gina's neighborhood the other day. Sorry. Yeah. Well,
you broke down?
Yeah. I broke down and visited my loser mom.
What's her cross street?
She's on Wilkinson.
Uh-huh. Adam had his mind erased like Eternal Sunshine. He has no idea.
She's on Wilkinson and Magnolia. She's by like Magnolia and Moore Park.
No, those are parallel.
Yeah, she's on like near Magnolia and Riverside or something like that. Yep, I'm trying to figure out what the fucking cross street is.
Still but, parallel, but I get you.
God, what is no, Whitsitt. She's on Whitsitt.
Oh, she's by the old by that big pub. Yes. It used to be the Draft. Yeah, I'm familiar.
Yeah. A place used to be an underage bar. Like an underage nightclub bar.
Oh,
for like 10 minutes.
Such a thing existed.
Yeah, and I remember
like a club for like, you know,
oh, sure, 18 plus like dance.
It was like 18, they would accept under 18, I think.
Oh, wow.
But so the deal was is there was no booze in the club.
Right.
So here's how human beings work. No booze in the club. Everyone just brings their own handle of vodka, sits in my grandparents' driveway, and gets loaded before they go walk across the street and go in the club. So it ended up being a shit show for Helen and Laszlo Gorok over there. But, I saw underneath the freeway overpass, they're putting, like, washing stations, mm-hmm. like the kind of thing you'd put out in the Rose Bowl parking lot if USC was playing a game.
There's porta potties and those foot pump sinks.
Yeah, I'm gonna take that and reject the premise of not having compassion. Like, does anyone? We all have compassion. Like, we see homeless, we're like, that sucks. That's too bad. That's unfortunate. You feel bad for them, but we've been beaten into indifference.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's ubiquitous to this point. Like you said, it's everywhere. And now it's the point where, like, this is a problem. I feel bad for these people. That something needs to be done to help this situation.
Well, what have you just said?
No one's callous about it. No one's like, fuck those people. It's like, they need help.
What about if you just said, you got rid of homeless and just said, these are gypsies. We got a gypsy problem in this state. And all these gypsies are setting up their tents and barbecues and it's a deep cut.
Defreck, I can't turn around. I've seen the damn gypsies.
Yeah, on the houseboat, I think. But right. The point is, they stole his laptop. They drugged him, I think, on a house.
Buzz.
So if... if they were gypsies, let's just say they were gypsies, and we said, we got a problem with the gypsies. They're setting up their tents and their barbecues and their lean-tos and their shelters and their plywood and stuff, and they're just showing up under all the freeway overpasses. I drove into Hollywood to go into the club or the outdoor club or whatever the fuck it is. It's so weird. You're doing a comedy set in Hollywood. And the promoter comes up to me and he goes, you're going up first. Everyone was supposed to do 15 minutes. We're going to do 10 minutes. And I go, why are we all doing 10 minutes? He goes, it's going to start raining. And I'm like, oh, that's right. We're in a fucking parking lot. Like, we're outside. It's going to start raining. We got to hurry up with the comedy. So what if it was just gypsies and there's gypsies everywhere? And somebody said, we got to do something to alleviate this gypsy problem. There's gypsies camped out.
Tramps and thieves.
All throughout. Cher's on her horse, bareback. Mm-hmm. We got to, I think I mixed my Cher songs there. Sorry. That was Halfbreed. The point is, how long before we get rid of Halfbreed? I mean, Cher's got to be canceled with her Halfbreed.
Have we gotten rid of that?
It's not officially. It's still around on the 70 stations. All right. So we got to get rid of these gypsies. And then somebody in the city council said, I know, why don't we drop off porta potties and hand washing stations to the gypsy camps? Wouldn't someone else in the council go, what the fuck are you talking about? How's it going to alleviate this problem? I think it's going to create more gypsies and a more entrenched gypsy camp. But that's essentially what we're now. We're now at that.
Right.
We're not at the point where we're just handing out heroin to the junkies and saying, could you stay in this part of the park?
That's exactly what I was just
thinking. That's the kind of compassion that just causes a bigger problem. At some point, adults need to enter the fray, start making decisions, and gypsy camps need to be dismantled. All right. Somebody, Ron from Philadelphia, remembers some Loveline stories, wants to know if I still remember them. I bet I do, but let's hear it. Ron, 32, Philadelphia.
Yeah. What's happening, man?
Hey, man. Are you out in Philly?
Yeah, I'm in the gayborhood of Center City, Philadelphia.
How is it out there?
It's a gayborhood.
It's, you know, yeah, it's gay. And, yeah, the weather is getting better on the East Coast.
How's the city? Are you guys, can you eat indoors? Are gyms open? Are schools open?
I don't know anything about schools, but yeah, restaurants are probably like half capacity. Like on Valentine's, the restaurants are full, like just completely crowded.
It must be nice to not have to eat outdoors or do stand-up when it starts raining. All right, but we're going to stay the course. We'll figure this one out. As the rest of the free world just opens around California, we're just going to stay the course.
You're going to be in Philadelphia in a month and a half or a couple months, so you can tell us yourself.
Yeah, I will, but I'm going to be hanging out in that Daytona at the Simeon Collection, so I won't have time for you.
That's fair. That's fair.
Audrey. Ron.
You should come to the neighborhood, man. They love you.
I love all gay neighborhoods. What is safer and cleaner than the gay neighborhood? I'd be curious. It's a chapter in my book, I think, in 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks.
Yep.
It's in there. I bet West L.A., WeHo, our gay neighborhood, with the property prices and all that's going on there, do they have homeless there? I don't feel like they would tolerate it there.
Interesting.
No, not. I mean, if you're just talking about literally driving down Santa Monica into, you know, WeHo, I don't see homeless people.
Also, no freeway underpasses in that neighborhood.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's true.
But these guys
and it borders. You know, you're right up against Doheny and Beverly Hills too.
These guys are bivouacked everywhere. They don't need the overpass is helpful, but they're everywhere. But be curious. Do your cops in the neighborhood have the jumbled gay flag on the side of the car like they do in WeHo?
No, there was actually a case in the neighborhood. There was like a gay pride parade, and someone burned like a blue flag or whatever. The cops arrested them, and I think they spent at least a night in jail.
All right, but no, nothing represented on the side of the vehicle.
No.
The cars, the sheriffs that patrol WeHo, as we've discussed years ago, have the gay flag on the side of the car. Then everyone thinks I'm an asshole because I go, why the gay flag on the car? And then they go, well, we have a large gay population and that's the group that they serve. And I go, okay. Glendale has a lot of Armenians. Should we have the Armenian flag on the side of the car? And they go, no. And I go, okay, thank you. Next argument. All right.
Yeah, well, maybe the cars are cleaner, you know, with the gay influence.
Well, it's not that. It's just the colors of the gay flag. It's in the shape of West Hollywood. Which
West Hollywood.
I don't think anyone knows the shape of it, so it just looks like a weird. Looks like somebody put an M80 in a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what it looks like. But anyway. All right. I'm an asshole. Go ahead, Ron.
All right. So the first story that I wanted your modern perspective of is your mother's method for protecting your ears while brushing your teeth.
Oh, yeah.
Protecting her ears?
Yeah. This is a good deep cut, Ron. My mom is very, very much into self-preservation. And if there was a fire, if there's a fire in that house, she'd be the first one out. Then eventually she'd flag down a neighbor and say, like, my kids are in there somewhere. She's very much into taking care of herself, which is not really the quality you want in a mom when it's a sort of me first thing. But that's the way she rolls. And at some point she got herself, and I'm sure of it, a used electric toothbrush.
Oh, boy.
Oh yeah.
The least items you would want least used.
Let's just assume he's just talking about the base.
Yeah, may have found the cartridges, you know, in the penny saver, but still in the package,
yeah,
you know,
right.
And decided that the sound of the electric toothbrush may be causing some hearing damage. So
the intense throttling.
She's a sensitive creature. So
like being across the street from a jackhammer.
My stepdad had these aircraft style ear protection, like you'd wear at the gun range.
Yeah, yeah.
And those things just sat on the cabinet, and when they brushed their teeth, they would put the headphones on. But the thing about the electric toothbrush is the sound comes from within. You know,
it's comes
not
from inside the house.
Yeah, there's no
right.
Yeah,
right. And then I would lay in my bed and cry for help, and my cries would never be heeded or answered. Yes,
amount of ear protection, external ear protection, is gonna solve that problem.
But Brian, it's the symbolism of I was abused, I had a horrible life, and now it's going to be all about me taking care of myself. So it's very symbolic.
Protected.
Just who you want running the household. That's exactly the kind of pragmatic woman, nuts and bolts, boots on the ground.
Nurturing.
Yeah. She's
Real mama bear.
She's Gavin Newsom-esque in her pragmatism.
Fiercely protective.
Yes. Of her hearing.
Of herself.
Yeah. Right.
Of her own faculties.
Although last time I talked to her, she couldn't hear me because her fucking mask was pulling out her hearing aid. So I don't know if it's work. But go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I got one more deep cut. The garbage disposal at the party house.
If you would like to know people's capacity to ignore things that aren't for them, and pay attention to now things that are them. Like I've always said, the microwave in the kitchen at the radio station is a shit show. Somebody blew up a burrito in there 3 weeks ago. But I guarantee the person who blew up the burrito in that microwave would never do that with their microwave at home. No. They're two completely separate standards of how we treat microwaves. People right. do that with the flip cap on the ketchup. It's always up when it's at work. But at home, they snap it down because they bought the ketchup. At the party house, I try to idiot-proof things. And the switch for the garbage disposal, it was a kind of a quiet garbage disposal, so I put a red light on the switch. You can buy like a stacked switch. One of them will have a toggle, and just above it is literally a red light. So it's like I have one here in the studio.
Yeah, it's the mics are on light.
Yeah. No, here it's the air conditioning is on. I have a toggle switch. So it's like because you can't because the air shuts off and then everyone goes home for the weekend and then it runs all weekend. And I put a switch with a red light on it. And I put that in and I was letting Danny Two Sheets stay there when he was in from New York. And one day I showed up on a Saturday and I could see as I was walking across the hall that the red light was on. And Danny Two Sheets had turned on the garbage disposal with the red light and neglected to ever shut the garbage disposal off. Like literally left.
Nothing against Danny, who I like very much. But what adult is not aware that they turned on the garbage disposal?
One
always begets off.
One who does not pay the electricity bill and one who did not purchase the garbage disposal. It gets a lot easier when you factor in those two mitigating sources.
This is the slippery slope to requiring a top sheet. Because the first night is just a top sheet. And then the world's their toilet after that.
Yes. Yes.
The world's your duvet.
That's right.
Yeah. Idiot proofing things is been a major part of my adult life. I've told you guys I put a 3-inch metal tech screw into the top of the toaster oven because of my old house. Lynette and the nanny and whoever would frequently put the plastic microwave cover on top of the toaster and then melt it. onto the toaster.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Unavoidable.
You've also put nail polish on the lock for the sliding
nail
door.
Nail polishes on the locks for the deadbolts because the cleaning ladies would come undo the deadbolts and the French doors, like open up, go out in the patio, and then they'd come back and they'd never lock it. And you couldn't see, wasn't locked. But at some point, my 3-inch tech screw was defeated. I will have you know that the actual microwave cover made it over the top of the tech screw.
Oh, wow.
Didn't slide it in, went over the top and melted it again. And then I announced to everyone in my home, shall I put in a second tech screw? And the answer was a defiant, maybe you should.
Maybe you should. Maybe think about that. We'll fix this problem once and for all.
Yes, those were two I do remember. Thanks, thanks, Ron.
Yeah.
Are you gay? Are you gay yourself or just living in the gay district?
Oh, no, I'm not gay. Although, you know, I've been accused of being gay.
Yeah, everyone dabbles a little in college. I get it.
It's a compliment.
Yeah.
Ooh, parade.
Mm-hmm. You got one more, Ron?
Yeah, sure. So you had like ebony and ivory thing that you had mentioned briefly back in Loveline?
Yeah. Yeah, I met a couple of girls once way back in the day when I was living in Santa Monica. One was heavy set woman of color, and then her very spindly white friend. And I did take them back to my apartment and have a little roll with them. I remember that clearly, because when we woke up Sunday morning, one of them, I think the white girl, was in a little bit of a rush. And she said, I said, where are you heading? And she's like, I got to get to church.
Anywhere but here.
I thought, I guess you do.
Wow,
I would say.
Look at you.
She needed to be blessed.
Yeah. It was a weird night, but I stand by it. Stand by that night. Thank you. Thanks, Ron.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Yeah, it's surreal talking to you. I've listened to so much Loveline and much ACS. Just thank you for the content.
Thanks. Thanks for the deep cuts. Good luck on gay. All right, let's see. We got Miri, and wants to know about the Woody Allen doc. Which, yeah, I got a long winded. The Woody Allen doc was very disturbing, but then I got a long email from Giovanni explaining that much of it has been discredited. But in my
by who?
Oh, the
Mr. Allen Woody.
Yeah, the nannies.
I mean, Gio knows all, but
the nannies recounted their statements and you know, investigators didn't find any blah blah blah. I'm still kind of about the part where he had the stepdaughter in high school and she was meeting him at his Manhattan pad up the street, that and we found some condom wrappers in the trash can and some nudie pictures. That's enough
Dianu, as the Jews would say. And
that's
also
right.
We have a little one in the house, and I roughhouse with him all the time. I pick him up. I turn him upside down. In no situation would you ever walk into a room and find my head in his lap, staring at his crotch, Mr. Allen.
Right.
Under no circumstances.
But that's part of the disputed stuff. I don't know. Mm. Mary? Wait, did I pinch her? Hi.
I love the show.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for... I'm literally nervous because I listened for the past so many years and I just love it. Anyway, I heard you guys talking about the Woody Allen doc, and the whole time you were talking about it, I kept thinking there's one guy you need to have on the show to talk about this documentary to get a full picture. And that man's name is Robert Whitey. And then the next day you mentioned him in connection with Albert Brooks, interviewed Albert Brooks. And I was like, fell off my chair. I was like, oh my God, like I have to call into the show. This guy has kind of, I don't know, made it his, like, he's dedicated his life to this a little bit, to defending Woody Allen. And I agree with you. Woody Allen definitely has done some shady things, nothing to talk about. I mean, I think that, but Suni Previn is a very brilliant woman and she speaks for herself. She has a lot to say on the subject as well. And people don't really listen to her side of the story. Mm-hmm. He's 40 something now, you know?
Right. He
has a lot of thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought maybe if you guys can get Robert Whitey on the show, I think that would be really interesting.
All right, He's also
a great director.
We will try and do that. Max Pat, make a note. I will say this. There is a side to every story, but as it pertains to adult males and teenage girls or prepubescent girls, there should never even be a story. That's okay. Kind of the way I.
Yeah. What happened was
right.
It's and when like, you have a 3 or 4 year old who she's the only consistent person when she's interviewed. You don't just go, yeah, well, but she's a kid. She's trying to tell you what happened.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's kind of in a weird way. It's kind of like Cuomo. It's like he didn't do a heck of a lot, it seems, to these six gals. But there's still six gals saying he did something, you know. Right. That you should try to lead a life where there's nobody saying anything. Yes. Okay.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. No, you do that very well, because the lengths I have to go for a compliment, haircuts, losing mm-hmm. weight, new clothes, I get radio silence. So you are doing a great job.
Keep it up, Adam.
I do that with the fellas as well, Gina, so you'll be glad. I'm an equal opportunity non-offender. All right. Jeff Cesario is waiting in the wings, and we'll talk to him right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
What's up, Beast Man? Class of 1981, North Island Huskies. Ceramics major, my friend. Hey, I got the answer to your unicycle. I have 4 kids. I taught them all how to ride a unicycle. Shopping cart. If you get behind a shopping cart, you get them the perfect balance between something to hold on to, but they still got to keep it by themselves. Trust me, works like a charm. And all you got to do is steal a shopping cart. Later.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Wow, shopping cart. Very good call. Jeff Cesario is joining us. The album, What Was I Thinking? Available now on Pandora, Spotify, and anywhere you get your music, and the podcast Play With Pain with Chet Waterhouse. Good to see you, Jeff.
Hey, good to see you guys. That's how I learned comedy was behind a shopping cart. Took it right up on stage. Took away all my fears.
Chris went and pulled your very first appearance on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, right?
Yeah.
And said it was a 7-minute set, but he thought we'd play the first 2 minutes. And he said, material holds up. Said, still good material. From, was it 87, did we figure out?
Yeah.
God, how nervous were you going out there?
I was pretty nervous. I was more nervous for my first Letterman in 84. I literally walked around Central Park till about 5 a.m. with my nuts in my throat, just trying to remember my act.
God, remember those days. Letterman.
But by The Tonight Show in 87, I was nervous, but I was together enough to know if I get that first joke out, I'll be fine. So,
were you New York based back then? Or where
no,
were you?
I was never New York based. Most people look at me and think I was, but I never was. I was a Minneapolis comic, and I moved straight to Los Angeles in 83. And 84, I did Letterman. I did another one 86 and 87. I started a series of Tonight Shows that lasted 4 or 5 years. So,
you know, I'm trying to think as I think about being really nervous about my first Letterman appearance and flying out there the night before. And just I had the extra added pressure of Jimmy, who was a massive Letterman fan and also didn't mind critiquing my appearances, you know, so I knew he was going to be watching. He'd have a jeweler's loop pressed up against the screen, you know, watching me. And I was like, God, I don't want to disappoint Jimmy because I got to come back and share an office with him. And if it's going to be a long plane ride back, if I go out there and lay an egg. But here's a question for everybody that I don't know what the answer is to, but Jeff is doing Letterman and he's nervous. But Jeff also has a set and he knows the set. He knows what his material is. And presumably he's worked it. He's got a certain comfort and familiarity with it. And so even though stand up, you're kind of out there on your own, you at least know what you're going to say. and you've done it in front of a crowd multiple times, and you've kind of found the beats and the moments in it. If you're going to do panel and you're, you know, Dr. Drew or Larry King or some, you know, basketball coach or something, you just have to kind of be there, answer some questions. If you're the comedian, meaning me, but I'm doing panel, then it's kind of sit down, stand up. But you've never tried any of these jokes right. before. You've never uttered unrehearsed. Any of this stuff right. before, and you don't really have it committed that well.
Yeah.
So what do you guys
it's
think?
It's also you've also got essentially Kenley Jansen sitting there who's going to throw a fastball at you at any given moment that you don't know.
Right. Letterman.
It's just like you're in the middle of a bit, and suddenly Carson or Letterman or any of these guys think of something. And wham, they throw it, you know.
Yeah, and Letterman wasn't a Groundlings grad. Like, he wasn't a yes and guy. He would just say, I never seen that. I know what you're talking about. Like, whatever it is, and you'd just be kind of sitting there. But still, I feel like I'd be more nervous in Jeff Cesario's situation. I don't know. Yeah. What do you guys think?
The only thing I can compare it to, this is not the same thing, but it's my only experience with this, is I was more nervous doing, well, Jeff was there, Adam was there, Gina was there. I was more nervous hosting Laughs with Bald Brian because that's not something I do. I'm not a stand-up comic. It's my first time before a crowd anywhere near that size. I was more nervous there than I was doing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which is insane, but I'm good at trivia. Like, if you're good at something, you're like, okay, well, this is something I can do. I was, of course, a little bit nervous, but I was much more nervous doing the stand-up because that's just not something I do. Whereas, you know, like Jeff was saying, once he got Tonight Show, he had been doing that thing for years, you know, a few years. So it was at least, yes, nervous, but at least something he was able to do.
Well, Jeff, you could probably answer. What do you think? Would you have rather that first shot on Letterman done the panel?
No.
Or just one-on-one with Letterman, or do the stand-up?
Especially the first couple of times. Just like, please, God, just let me do what I do.
Yeah, let me play my sport.
Yeah, don't dress me up in an outfit and ask me to. No, I can't. Just please, just make the spot as big as you can.
Yeah, Biff.
I'll hit it. Make sure the cameras are running, and I swear to God, I'll try my best.
It was kind of a weird, surreal thing because Biff Henderson, who can't be with us anymore, can he?
I have no idea.
Biff Henderson was the black guy who's kind of a funny character.
Stage manager, right?
Stage manager, right? And the problem is when you watch Letterman all the time and Biff becomes a big part of the show,
he's still alive.
He's still alive?
Yeah.
He's the oldest living black man named Biff. People don't know that.
He's 74.
It might be.
Oh, he was not that old back then. So the part that, as long as you're a Letterman fan, you've watched Letterman every night, and especially watched it as a civilian. See, this is kind of an interesting thing. Another dynamic we should try to explore, which is there are plenty of new shows that came about after I was a celebrity. So I didn't grow up watching The View. So when I was a guest on The View, I was already a celebrity, and The View had been on, just started or whatever. So I didn't care about going on The View. It's kind of like when you do a show, anyone who does a show in Australia or England or something, that's why they're drunk half the time. They're like, I don't give a shit. We're in Australia. I don't even want anyone to watch. I mean, the internet has destroyed all that, but you'll see like American guests do some Australian shows. Like, that guy was out of his mind. He was loaded. So Letterman, I had watched for years as a civilian. I mean, I would just sit in Ray's mom's apartment in North Hollywood and we'd stay up and we're loser 19-year-olds and we just sit there. So now the notion of going on to Letterman, it now got into the surreal zone. And then Biff Henderson, who I would have recognized anywhere, was the guy who pulled the curtain for you. Mm. So now you're standing backstage. It's like, Biff, what are we doing? You're going out. It's what you're doing. What are we doing? A bit? It's like, no, this is my job.
Yeah, I was lucky in the sense that I did a lot of music material in my act. Not a lot, but I had about like a 5-minute chunk on music, on playing music, which, you know, nobody else really did. And the guys in the band had heard it, Paul and Will Lee and those guys had heard that material. So they were a little bit fans. They kind of knew me a little bit. And that always put me at ease. Whenever I was in a situation like that, where I knew the musicians, that always made me relax. Mm. I don't really know why, but it just did. I just felt like, okay, I got allies here.
Mm-hmm. You got a whole, and it's a group, you know, it's a crew that will chuckle and they're right there with you on stage.
Do you
right.
remember the and song they you, played when you went out?
Yeah, I think the first couple of times they did some Tower of Power, probably what is it?
Wow.
Ryan.
Sweet.
And then they did, and they loved taking requests. Because I imagine most comics just go, yeah, play whatever you want. And I would come in and go, do you guys know Oakland Stroke by Tyler? And they go, yeah.
Wow. That's a badass that tune. Off.
And then he got into this thing. A Kool and the Gang song called Fresh. Mm-hmm. And Paul would always go, you're a fresh young kid. I'm going to play Fresh for the fresh young kid. So they would then about exciting. The last four or five times I did it, they played Fresh.
She's so exciting to me.
You know, I just love it.
She's great. Fresh, yeah. Fresh, exciting. Do, no, 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 no. So exciting to you. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, Adam.
We're enjoying the shit out of this School and the Gang song known as Fresh.
Yeah, I see that. Dawson's bopping around.
Yeah, well, take a note. Yeah. Dawson likes it.
I see that. I'm ready. I'm ready to do the set.
Biff standing back there with his headset on, his big glasses. Yeah.
Biff's taking the crew.
Oh, yeah. People talking about the girl who's come to town. You guys know this one?
Yep.
I don't think so.
It's going to kick in, Gina.
Get the chorus. No one knows her name. She's just a mystery. I have seen her. Oh, wait. Maybe once or
twice. Hot mystery women are called whores, by the way. They're not. There's times like chick comes in. She's dressed to the nines. No one's seen her before. She's wearing this stiletto heels. Yeah, that's called a prostitute.
She's fresh. Exciting. She's so exciting to me. She's fresh, fresh, exciting.
I think your bass player can handle the fresh part.
This song grooves.
Yeah, yeah. Lay down this lick.
Play Oakland Stroke after this.
Me and my brother used to sing, she's fresh fish.
Yeah, this is a good song to fuck her.
It could literally be she's living.
She's fresh. Would they play this song for you to go out there?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, they play the chords the last three, four times. Because he got in the groove with it, and I just thought, well, Paul's enjoying it. Yeah, I'm fine with it. Let's go.
All right, everyone.
She's fresh. Exciting. She's so exciting to me. She's fresh. 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 Exciting.
Add this to your karaoke repertoire, everybody.
That's right.
All right. Do we have Oakland Shuffle?
Oakland Stroke.
Stroke.
Tower of Power.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Brian grew up with Tower of Power.
Top 10 best. Most played band in my house, easily grown
up. Oh, wow.
Oh, my dad loves Tower of Power.
I think that's impressive. I'm a man. Is this it? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can see him walking out there. Sleeves pulled up, polo tie,
skinny tie. What are the last big regional bands?
Tower Power.
Like they're a local band to the Bay Area. They're huge in the Bay Area.
Well, and aren't there like a dozen of them? Like
they interchange members quite freely.
Well, these are a lot of players from around the Bay Area.
Yeah,
come in and out.
Probably not more than the Coasters, though. The Coasters, who had their first hit in 1956, have a bunch of 33-year-old guys in the band now, and they're like still the Coasters. All right, Cesario. Let's see. Well, why don't we play a little bit of that of that Carson clip that Chris dutifully found.
This is a good night for a new comedian who's making his first appearance because you're in a good mood, and that's always helpful to somebody who has not done this show before. Jeff is from originally the state of Wisconsin, and he performs like a lot of the young comedians. He performs frequently at the Improvisation here in Hollywood, and so would you welcome him, please, Jeff Cesario. Jeff.
high-waisted pants could look.
My goodness.
Thank you very much. My name is Jeff Cesario. I am originally from Wisconsin. A couple other escapees here tonight. That's me. I've been out here 4 years in California. I've yet to go to the beach. Too many blonde people at the beach in California. I show up at a beach out here, people go, "Who called a cab?" I prefer my sports indoors. I watch sports on TV. My favorite's probably basketball on TV. I watch basketball on TV because I cannot believe the moves these guys make. I watch bowling on TV because I cannot believe there's prize money involved. What could possibly be less strenuous and more boring than bowling on television? Golf, okay, golf. I'll confess, being from Wisconsin, I'll watch golf on TV, you know, just to see really good weather. But who is riveted to their seat for a televised golf match? Who calls eight friends, gets a keg of beer? Landscapers, maybe, huh?
Applause break.
Some sports I cannot watch on TV. They're just too hard for me. Tennis is one of them. I like to play, but tennis is hard to watch. There's too many arguments in tennis. They're always arguing whether the ball is in or out. Why don't they just make the out of bounds out of Velcro? I think out of everybody, I think the best athletes we have, probably horses. You ever seen a horse run a race live and in person? Beautiful animals. Although they have the best incentive to win a race. You're a horse, you win the Kentucky Derby, where do they send you? Stud farm. I'm guessing most of us could shave a couple of seconds off a 100-yard dash time. It would have helped me in high school. Olympian Carl Lewis in the lead. Wait a second, from nowhere, 14-year-old Jimmy Dugan. That's the only real thing we have left on television. Sports. Everything else to me is completely out of control. But people will believe it if they see it on TV. This is amazing. There was a special on the other night on the Bermuda Triangle, and my friends believed it. People disappear without a trace in the Bermuda Triangle. Yeah, these people who disappear, you know where they are? Bermuda. Disappears. It's always some poor guy with six kids in college, a huge mortgage, and a dead-end job. Oh, he disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle. Yeah.
Yeah, what the fuck happened to the Bermuda Triangle? Every third TV show was Leonard Nimoy narrates, and they'd always show the compass spinning around on the dash of the plane.
Oh, yeah. Haywire.
Right.
It went the way of quicksand.
Yes, ooh. And the dodo bird.
Jeff,
it was
that
coming
was,
on. Okay.
I was just going to say that was hilarious, and your gait and your movement, your physicality is just so relaxed and charming and fun right out of the gate.
First
oh, cool.
show.
Good. I'm
first.
Glad I've lost all of that, of course. But here's the outfield.
Here's
the
a outfield. Question. I you know, once when you do tons of stand up and you're used to playing clubs, you're so used to having the mic in your hand. And then you go there and you don't get to hang on to that mic, and a lot of guys really like the feeling of that mic in their hand. Was that tough?
No. As an Italian, I just went, give me 10 seconds, and then boom, I figured it out.
Your hands start
flying
around.
I didn't think about it. I just knew my hands would react to what I was saying.
All right, we got a couple of military men. They're going to be joining us pretty soon, so I think we should cut right to the chase and get to Chet Waterhouse. Why don't we Dawson's running back to a seat. Fresh.
The Sports with Chet Waterhouse.
Oh, brother, time for the Waterhouse update, brought to you by Hall & Oates, the food truck that hauls a mellow duo of oatmeals right to your door. NFL Cowboys signed Dak Prescott, $126 million guaranteed. Meanwhile, I'm boiling ramen in a coffee pot at a Red Roof Inn. Chicago Bears want Seattle's Russell Wilson and are offering Khalil Mack two improv groups, and Lou Malnati's Deep Dish of the Month. That item brought to you by Menadryl, the erection pill. NBA All-Star Game. Team LeBron beat Team Durant using a quarter-by-quarter combined concurrent and aggregate scoring formula that would have had Stephen Hawking thinking, you know what, just have my angry wife push me into the sun-baked backyard. College football. Kansas dumps coach Les Miles after rumors he hit on co-eds while at LSU. Miles said he was merely teaching an extension course called Hitting on Co-Heads While at LSU. That item sponsored by Suzy QAnon, the snack cake filled with sweet conspiracy. America's pastime. No, not trying to muster sympathy for a wealthy ex-princess. Baseball, spring ball, Royals Bobby Witt Jr., slugged a 484-foot homer clear out of the park in Arizona. The home run disputed by Woody Allen's legal team. And finally, this week in sports history, the year 1946, the place Boston, Massachusetts. Red Sox star Ted Williams offered $500,000, which is $20 million in today's money, to play baseball in Mexico. He refuses, saying, I'd rather have my dead head cut off and frozen. That wish granted in 2002. This Waterhouse Update brought to you by Edgar Ethan Allan Poe, finely crafted goth furniture. If you want more of me this weekend, Saturday I'll be calling the Papa Shot Low Ceiling Championships. Look for some ricochet concussions there. Sunday, for real, me and Trevor Longwad are going to simulcast hot man-on-man PGA action. That's right, the final round of the Players Championship from TPC Sawgrass, only on the Stereo app. It's simple. Download the Stereo app. Watch the coverage on NBC, but catch our call. Why not? It's golf, for God's sake. Loosen up. This is Chet Waterhouse reminding you to play with pain.
Nice.
Chet Waterhouse Sports.
Sorry we had to play that clip from 37 years ago about you talking about not wanting to watch golf. We didn't know you were going to plug a golf tournament moments after we played that clip.
That's called the old setup.
That's right.
I don't worry about those.
Oh, Jeff Cesario. All I can think of is what a pro every time
Thank
he comes
so
on
much.
This show. Stand-up album, What Was I Thinking, and the podcast Play With Pain with Chet Waterhouse, available on Apple Podcasts as well. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Chet.
My pleasure.
Always great. All right, Total Gym. Well, no better time to work out at home than now. As we said, in California, I don't even think the gyms are open, which...
No, they're in parking lots.
Doesn't seem like a great plan to me, but all right. Now, might as well just stay home and work out with the Total Gym. They got their premier model, Total Gym Fit. They're our new partner. Gets a full body workout. We have the thing set up here because I actually like to get a little lather going at the place of work. And by the way, it's a lot. It's like half as expensive as one of those newfangled fitness bikes. Over 85 exercises, one machine, 12 levels of resistance. You work the core, work the arms, shoulders, biceps, thighs, whole body. Just 10, 20 minutes a day. Comes fully assembled, which is nice. Just pop it right out of the box and pop it up. It'll slide under your bed, and it's a great way to work out at home. A-plus rating from Better Business Bureau. Right, Dawson?
Right now, Total Gym is offering a 30-day in-home trial on the Total Gym Fit for just $1. Seriously, $1. So what do you have to lose? And no matter what, no matter which Total Gym you try, Adam Carolla listeners get an additional 20% off whatever discount they're currently running. Just head to TotalGymDirect.com/Adam to get this special offer. You must go to this URL, TotalGymDirect.com/Adam, to get an additional 20% off.
Well, we'll talk to Admiral James, Stavridis. Stavridis. There you go. Stavridis and Elliot Ackerman. They've written a book. We're going to talk about China and their navy and global domination. And we've been always talking about Russia, but we should probably be talking a little more about China. So we'll and I have an interesting clip to play these guys as well. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with the Admiral and Elliot right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, It's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.